Today's Tuesday, August 8th.
This week, we've had warring factions, intense media scrutiny, back-channeling, corruption, foreign influences. It's amazing.
Now, of course, we are talking about Uber's search for their new CEO. What?
What else could we be talking about? So we actually paraphrased. That's the beginning paragraph from the story from Recode on Uber. That's like literally what the story starts out as. And it's about this Travis Kalanick. I don't know how you pronounce his name, but that's the guy we've always talked about. And
CEO, former CEO of Uber.
Yeah, he stepped away, but wait.
Yes. So they were looking for, you know, Uber's been in the news a lot lately, certainly been in a lot of our programs. I wonder if they watch it over at Recode, and that's where they got the idea for the misdirection intro. I'm not really sure, but...
I don't think we can claim that. Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Was it Carson? I like Carson's misdirection stuff. Well, anyway. So Uber is a troubled company. You know, they came up with a cool concept, and they're successfully, they're a successful service, I should say. They've successfully marketed themselves as like a ride-sharing service. Generally, the people that do the driving are happy. Generally, the people that take the rides are happy. It's kind of disruptive to the existing incumbent taxi market. But, you know, this is a company that's had a lot of controversy. There are apparently prevailing sexist attitudes within the company and all sorts of really disturbing stories that have emerged from inside the company. So, you know, they said, hey, or their governing board said, hey, you know, what if we look for a CEO, a female CEO, or a CEO that's, you know, something that would not fit with the narrative that is being built from all these leaked stories from inside of Uber?
Well, that's not going to happen. The final candidate for a female CEO has tweeted that she will not be the CEO. And it's down to a couple of guys, and they all, I mean, this story sort of makes it sound like they're not the strongest candidates. And they have another problem, and that is Travis has come back from his yachting tour early, and he's back in the offices, and he's just like just showing up in people's offices and harassing them.
Wait, I thought he was supposed to be punished. Yeah. Yachting tour?
Yachting tour is his punishment. That's your punishment when you're the CEO of a major corporation. It's kind of like when you're a cop and you shoot somebody and you take a 2-week vacation.
So a yacht outing is some sort of punishment for CEOs?
That is the best they could do, I guess. It really gives you sort of an impression, this article, that there's a culture of fear at Uber. And this guy's at the heart of it. And amazingly, he's apparently told some of the remaining CEO candidates that he's Steve Jobsing it. Which, of course, refers to being kicked out of a company and then returning later after they failed and taking a tighter control than ever before.
I don't think that's going to work out for him. I really don't. We'll see.
Yeah, I think a lot of people... they sort of take on the moniker of Steve Jobs to describe themselves when they've done something horrible.
It doesn't excuse the horrible behavior. It's like, oh, I can justify this horrible thing because of that, because Steve Jobs is a horrible person, but he was successful somehow. Yeah. It's like, right. Most people that do that are not actually successful. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out for Uber in the coming months.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to ultimately bounce back or he's going to get back control, but he is Steve Jobsing it until further notice.
Joining Apple, China has also co-opted Amazon to ban certain things from their cloud offerings. Now, you know, this story gives a little bit of a background about how things are organized for Amazon inside of China. I didn't really realize the extent to which this occurs. I was sort of vaguely aware of it, but Amazon cannot directly operate in China, apparently, according to the article. They have to employ a proxy corporation that is a local, quote-unquote, company to perform their services. And so Amazon services, Amazon web and cloud services in China are operated by a proxy company, which has been told to not allow any kind of VPN services, similar to the app ban that we discussed last week.
And Amazon isn't arguing. They're like, okay, fine, whatever you say, China. It's also interesting to find out that Amazon is a tiny, tiny part of the market in China. Alibaba, of course, the Chinese Amazon, is most of it. You know, they do most of the cloud services just like Amazon does most of the cloud services over here. So it's interesting they're willing to sort of take this PR hit to hang on to that small piece of that market. It shows you how important the Chinese market is to these big companies.
That is really interesting. I guess it's considered an emerging market or something. It just doesn't seem consistent with the American ideals, whether or not those are properly executed on, even, you know, even across the pond. I don't know.
Well, I think the problem is the American middle class is shrinking while the Chinese middle class is growing. So you don't have to be a genius to figure out, you know, where to cast your net.
Also, kind of a follow-up from last week, a story that we missed and now has a little bit more details. Russia has also banned VPNs to stop users from accessing censored sites. But, you know, there has been time to request comment from government officials and things like that. And the comments from Russia, the Russian politicians are really interesting. They're saying, no, 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 we're not banning VPNs. We're just saying to companies they need to not let users access sites that have been banned under Russian law.
Yeah, basically, you can use a VPN, but you can't use it to bypass the firewall. So why would you care about a VPN? They are very adamant about, like, no, we've decided these sites are wrong, they're bad. And that means that they are wrong and bad. And if you're trying to go to them, you just simply can't. And that's sort of like, you can't argue with them because they're arguing from that point. It's like, well, why would any good person ever want to go to that site? And the argument's over.
The onus is, of course, on VPN providers, because a VPN provider would have to know that you're connecting from a Russian onboarding point to, say, like a German offboarding point and say, oh, this connection to our German facilities is from Russia. Let us apply the Russian DNS filter or Russian IP filter or whatever kind of filtering mechanism it is for those people based on where they're connecting from. I mean, I guess technically it's feasible, but this seems like we're charging down a very dangerous, slippery slope.
When I look for a VPN, I look for ones that, and a lot of them will specifically say, we don't look and we don't log. So that's one of the big features, is like, this, we don't care. Do what you want with this. This is your connection. And to do this, that couldn't be true. I would directly violate.
They have to be doing some kind of packet inspection and analysis.
I'm sure they'd have to log, because the Russian government's going to come along and be like, prove you didn't do this.
You have to have your own logs for defense. It's like, prove a negative. And it's like, well, the only way I can do that is to be under surveillance 24/7. That's a little bit of a problem. Also, another follow-up that has more information is the Bricker bot. We talked about this. This is I don't really know how to describe him. Some sort of security cowboy that has gone rogue. And it's like, look, there's all these Internet of Things devices that are making my life hell. I'm going to stop it. And so, 60,000 devices, Indian modems, have been affected by this because they were just open to the Internet. Anybody could attack them. But this guy has said, look, I've had it. Other people have co-opted your modems. I'm going to co-opt your modems and shut them down. And he did.
Now, the Indian telecommunications companies, they press released and they're like, okay, this was our customer's fault. They left the admin username password pair on these modems, which is how this bot got control of them. And he responded, no. You left the port open. So there's a port where the ISP communicates with your modem to do updates and things like that. Well, they just left it open. Anybody that connected through that port, it didn't authenticate. So the BrickerBot malware was just like, let me in. I will destroy this. And it got, I think, 45% of one company's user base.
Yeah.
And think about how many people are in India. How many people were affected? How many households? And so he proved that not only was that port open, but the ISP had a backdoor login different than the
admin.
The one that the user could set. So he exploited both of those. Now, unlike his previous attacks, he did not destroy these modems. He just sort of disabled them. Previously, BrickerBot was famous for just
bricking.
Yeah, totally destroying a thing. But he just turned them off. He's claimed full responsibility. He seems very proud, very smug about his accomplishments. And he says he will continue to attack these Internet of Things or unsecured devices whenever he finds them.
Well, I hope he never comes to DEF CON in America. More on that in a minute. Microsoft has said they are not going to patch another 20-year-old vulnerability in SMB V1.
Which was discovered at DEF CON.
It was presented at DEF CON, but this is related to the whole NSA, you know, weapons-grade malware leak and that sort of thing. This is more of a denial of service than take over your machine. But Microsoft has basically said, look, we're not going to patch this. We don't even have any enterprise customers that are interested in footing the bill for this. You're on your own. And honestly, it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. This is probably one of the least threatening of the SMB V1 attacks. So, as we've said in the previous stories, which were much worse, just turn it off.
Yeah. I read one report that said it may be possible to escalate this into something that was like the attack that was used previously, but again, just turn it off. And I think one of the recent Windows updates, like I think there was one last Windows update that was pushed out that disabled SMB V1, because I had a few people show up on the forum and they were like, hey, Windows XP, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, that Windows update disabled SMB V1. It's never going to work again. Sorry, deal with it. Don't actually do it. So I don't know.
No big loss.
Cable giants. Oh no, ads have taken over. Cable giants have stepped up the piracy battle. Now this one is bizarre, yeah. Because this is not criminal law, this is civil law. This, but in Canada, terrifying. With civil law, apparently you can have Mounties storm your house and take your stuff.
I don't know if they're Mounties. They've got a name for it. I can't remember what the name of it. It's a certain kind of warrant, a search warrant or civil search warrant or something like that. So this has to do with Bell. I think there might have been some other ISPs or
Shaw
distribution media people in Canada. The problem they have is with this software called
TV add-ons.
Now, this is not like a torrent or a download type of thing. This is one of those streaming boxes. And the device itself doesn't even contain the streaming services. You have to have these add-ons. So you buy this device, you install the add-ons, and it directs you to streams of copyright content, like Game of Thrones.
Well, it's not just, I mean, the add-ons, most of the add-ons do things other than pirate material. In fact, the accusation says that less than 1% of the add-ons that are available through this directory, you know, organization thing. I'm trying to think of an analog for this, and maybe like the Nexus mod manager for Skyrim or something like that. It's like Skyrim is, you know, a copyrighted game, and there are a bunch of add-ons and mods and stuff you can get for that. It's kind of like that.
And 1% of those mods are nude mods.
Or 1% of those mods are like the game itself or whatever.
So, but what happened here ultimately is they did not like the fact that you could buy this device and install this 1% and you could watch Game of Thrones. That's what it comes down to. So they got this civil search warrant.
Kill it from orbit.
I've never heard of a civil search warrant.
Yeah.
So
Canada, what's wrong with you?
When you get this civil search warrant, then some agent of the court and some cops come with you to the person's home. So you can't just be like, I'm not opening the door, go away. And they come in, they question this guy for 16 hours. They will not let him talk to his lawyer. They will not let him say no. He will not answer any questions. And they seize all the electronics in his house.
Not just the electronics. They also demanded that he give up his passwords to everything that's in the cloud. Oh, yeah, that's right.
They took his Twitter account and his Facebook account.
And he hasn't got back any of that.
And I think even the hosting.
Yeah, the website where the thing was hosted, it's probably been laden with malware by now. So if you're using that website, you probably should stop.
Yeah. Now, the crazy thing is, right after this happened, I don't know if it was the judge that issued it, but some judge was like, oh my God, what have you done here? This is the biggest abortion of justice I've ever seen. And he sort of like, you know, undid the civil search warrant. But as of the article, I don't know if it's still the case, they had appealed it, and that appeal process prevented him from getting any of his stuff back, including his social accounts and whatever.
Yeah, it turns out that may not have been procedurally correct, all those things that happened.
Yeah.
So this is going to be an interesting case to follow. In fact, the judge, I think an almost direct comment from the judge that lifted the ban and ordered them to give their stuff back was, it looks as though this move was designed to subvert the accused person's ability to pay for a defense, because it looks like it's out to destroy their business.
Yeah, every time he would talk about, no, I'm not going to answer your question. I don't know if Canada has a Fifth Amendment analog. You would think that they would. I mean, Canada is pretty progressive, right? But when he tried to say no to a question, I'm not answering that, or when he tried to consult his lawyer, who was in the room, they threatened him with contempt of court, and they said they would lock him up immediately if he did either of those things. Now, I hope that was just them bullshitting this guy, you know, strong-arming him. He didn't know any better. Because if you can get away with that in Canada, that is crazy.
That is completely nuts. Speaking of which, this is something that we predicted would happen, and we were right. Bruce Schneier has a really interesting blog post. This is actually from 2013, but he's like, wait a minute. With the Der Spiegel leaks and some other stuff that has come to light recently, has anybody talked about this? And what he's talking about is, you know, we've talked about the NSA's tailored intercept programs, things like that. No news there. But this is, the NSA has targeted specifically Microsoft and error reports to Microsoft on the public internet. So you can search for, like, if you have a target and their IP address is in the system, you can say, hey, what kind of data is their computer reporting to Microsoft? What sort of telemetry is being collected? Are there any programs that are crashing from like the Windows hardware compatibility, whatever? And all of a sudden, things get a lot more sinister with the Windows 10 telemetry stuff.
And most importantly is the blue screen. So the thing that the NSA particularly was looking at was the hardware crashes and stuff like that. So when they could collect this data, they wanted to look at it to see if there was any way that they could get into that system. Because your system doesn't have to be compromised for them to get this information. They just have to be watching you. So they were actually looking at people's blue screens. It's like, what's going wrong here? Can we take advantage of that? And probably not the most useful thing in the world, but still terrifying.
Yeah, well, if they do it on a large enough scale, they could spot problems before Microsoft. It's like, oh, we've got a whole bunch of machines that are reporting a particular error. It's like, yeah, this error is mitigated by ABCXYZ. It might not be on Microsoft's radar, especially if no one is really actively working on exploiting it in the criminal community. But having that kind of information available inside an intelligence agency, that's hugely valuable. And that would be great if we could, you know, trust that that information was being used only to combat our enemies, but not spy and subvert our own populace.
But to them, the populace is the enemy. So.
Apple, switching gears to Apple, but are we really? Owns $52.6 billion in U.S. treasuries, more than any of the other major countries. There's a list here. Yeah. This list is amazing.
Yeah, Apple's right behind the United Arab Emirates, I think. Yeah. So pretty incredible. $52.6 billion.
Wow.
That's a lot. Now, if you're not hip to what a treasury security is, when the United States needs money, they sell debt. And we're the world's reserve currency, so that debt is very valuable to other countries, the way the world economy works. And Apple, being number 22, or 23, I guess, is pretty incredible. So what kind of leverage would this give Apple over the U.S. government? Well, if they wanted to, they could sell it all at once, and that would be very bad.
So they should have some leverage there. Hasn't China threatened to do that?
China has definitely threatened to do that. Yeah, China might be number one, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's with over $1 trillion. So dropping the bucket, I don't know. It's like our fates are inexorably linked across the pond there. So like our goals looks more and more similar, but the way that we get there is, from opposite sides of the clock.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. You can almost respect China for the fact that they're honest about it.
No, we're not going to do this.
They're not pretending.
Yes, we are spying on our citizens. Yeah. Okay, sounds good. Thanks. VPNs? No, we can't spy on that. Oh, okay. Sounds good. The FCC, this is also kind of a follow-up. The FCC is full again, now with 3 Republicans, 2 Democrats. One of them is reinstated. They were suspended when Trump, the American president, came into office. And the other one is a new Republican appointee.
That's Carr, Mr. Carr. He was one of Pai's disciples from the previous iteration. And amazingly, now prepare yourself for this, a former telecom lawyer.
They have a long working history.
Seems like you wouldn't want those people in that role. But he is almost guaranteed to be, the final vote on the net neutrality thing or anything they need that Pi wants, this guy will probably pair it.
We've also got some follow-ups on the whole like FCC denial of service comments thing, but that's coming up a little bit later. But you can imagine with those kind of people in play, especially lawyers, it's like, how can we subvert this freedom of information request? It's like, oh, no, you just need to trust us that there was a denial of service attack, and it was totally not an inside job. WikiLeaks has revealed more tools from the CIA for hacking webcams. And so this was really interesting. These tools appear to be designed specifically so that, let's say that you're running a laptop and you leave your laptop open and you're running some kind of security software for monitoring your apartment or monitoring, your desk or whatever. These tools appear to be designed specifically to subvert that scenario and replace, footage of somebody physically accessing and installing something on your computer with footage that has no one there.
Yeah, or any time that... Because, you got agents in the field, it's the CIA. Anytime that those agents, because we live in a world where cameras are everywhere, anytime those agents might be picked up by those cameras, this software is supposed to stop that from happening, which is, it's an impressive scope if they can do that. I mean, think about that. Just in a given location, we're going to ghost our people out of all the surveillance.
It's like that movie Ocean's 11 when they were stealing from the casino, and it's like we need to appear that everything is cool inside the vault. It's like that.
Do you think they have like on file loops from every major location?
Isn't that how they figured it out in Ocean's 11? Because they had like a new logo installed on the floor or something, and it's like, wait, the security cam footage of the vault doesn't have the logo that we just had installed on the floor. So that's, you know, that's the things you got to change up your security cam footage every week.
Yeah, you got to have some like a put an LED screen everywhere that just changes every 48, 72 hours, something like that.
I'm going to coin a new term here. It's called the CCTV canary. You're going to have to put your CCTV canary on your CCTV and change it from time to time so that you know when you're looking at looped footage from the past at first glance. So yeah, DEF CON was last week. We talked a little bit about it and some of the stuff that's come out from DEF CON. We got one story from DEF CON that's a little bit later. But the big thing is the UK researcher who stopped WannaCry has been arrested and charged for his role in creating, apparently or allegedly, his role in creating the Kronos banking Trojan from about 2 years ago.
Yeah. Now, I wonder if he's been to DEF CONs in those previous years. I didn't mention that.
I don't know. That's a good question.
It's an excellent question because it doesn't seem like anybody was too interested in this Kronos thing until after this guy broke the WannaCry virus.
Yeah. And, you know, no good deed goes unpunished. Looking at the indictment here, the indictment has come out. You know, everybody was like, when this first happened, everybody assumed it was for the WannaCry involvement. But when the grand jury indictment came out, it says, no, this was for his involvement in the Kronos banking Trojan, and new information has come to light where it looks like it was purchased by undercover police officers in like 2000, and he has an unnamed co-conspirator and all this other stuff. But it doesn't really talk about the monetary damages from the Kronos Trojan or anything like that. Honestly, this indictment reads as rushed. And so my guess for this would be that at DEF CON, they tried to recruit him by saying, you know, we are aware of your past transgressions. We want you to work for us. And if you don't work for us, we're going to make your life really difficult. And so he called what he thought was a bluff from them. And this is the ensuing thing. Now, no doubt they're going to heap on a bunch more stuff in the indictment, I'm sure. But this was really just to make sure that he was detained. They also did really sort of like underhanded things. Like he went, there's a gun range in Vegas. And so, you know, whenever you're here, whenever international visitors are here, it's like, you got to go to the gun range because you can play with some really super powerful firearms in a safe and controlled environment. And so they even use that to the judge, like, no, he played with firearms, therefore he is dangerous. And it's like, come on, it's Vegas. They let 13-year-olds play with firearms. Come on. It's America.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying when being smarter than the powers that be is a crime. And that's, if that's true, if what you're saying is true, that's what we're seeing here. He's in jail because he's too smart.
It's like, I wonder if he was smart enough to get proof that some sort of deal was offered. It's like, if you go to work for us, we will look over these things from the past. But if you don't, then we're going to charge you. And that's assuming that he was involved in the way that they say he was. It could be total misrepresentation. We don't know, but his lawyer has said that he is going to plead innocent to all of the stuff. And honestly, for like being involved in a Trojan, not having monetary damages for that, not naming specific victims, things like that, that doesn't look good for this type of case, in my opinion.
I bet you at least it'll get him on the no-fly list. He won't be to another DEF CON.
Well, you know, this is a good argument for having DEF CON somewhere else, because it's like, it doesn't really matter what reality is, it's what we can spin it into.
Yeah, but, I mean, look at what the European governments are doing. Where is that somewhere else going to be? Look at Australia.
There seems to be a level of dishonesty in prosecution. I can't wait for the prosecutors to figure out that it's like, we've got this guy's encrypted laptop hard drive, and we found this one-time pad that will decrypt his laptop into this amazing cornucopia of child pornography. And for the people that don't like get that and understand that, I mean, like, it's like you're explaining that to a grand jury, and a grand jury's like, oh, that's, oh, you got, yeah, you just need to take this one-time pad decryption key and it'll convert this data set into that. It's like, well, clearly that guy was, you know, but because the jury doesn't understand that I'm saying that the one-time pad was designed specifically to incriminate that guy. It was funny. It was an encryption joke.
Nor will the judge, nor will the media, nor will most of the country. People will just sort of buy into it.
A lot of the viewers of this program have paused the program to go look up what the hell I'm talking about, and they're going to be sorely disappointed once they figure it out because it wasn't that funny. Verizon is offering rewards, quote unquote, I guess, points or something to people.
Are they good boy points?
good boy points. It basically is. Verizon's offering good boy points if you let them install spyware on your phone that monitors literally everything.
Well, they don't tell you that up front. It's just, hey, that's the new rewards program. But in order to join the new rewards program, you have to join this, was it Verizon Up or something like that?
Yeah.
And that's the thing that tracks everything you do on your phone, basically. And they're going to sell all these things. It's part of the agreement. They would track it all. They're going to sell it all. Not just their Oath, Yahoo, Verizon. What's the other company in that? They got this new, you know, it's kind of like Alphabet. They've got an umbrella company now. But also to third parties. Selected third parties, which means those that will give us money.
Yes.
And so if you don't want everything sold from your Verizon account, don't sign up for the rewards.
Yeah, that's just a public service announcement. You need to make sure you're not a part of that and you turn it off and maybe find a better provider. I don't know. Just letting you know. News about Kim.com. We haven't mentioned anything about Kim.com in a while.
He lost his, I think we did a story on that. He lost his case to try to get his money back.
Yeah. And he lost his extradition thing as well, although there's some clerical paperwork and he's working through some appeals to try to avoid being extradited to America, where he's never been, to face charges. Yeah. So it turns out that the NSA continued to spy on Kim.com in New Zealand using GCSB equipment without the GCSB's knowledge, apparently. At least that's what they told the court.
Right.
So, yeah, it's like the New Zealand court was like, okay, you know, you've got your man. You need to stop spying. And they continued to spy and told the court, oh, no, we totally stopped. And now it is, we're not wittingly spying. That sounds really familiar. Sounds like the Clapper testimony.
But think about what they're admitting here. Like, Super Spy A is saying, well, Super Spy B was spying and we were helping them, but then we decided to stop and we couldn't help it. They just kept doing it. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Aren't you a super spy? Shouldn't you be able to control that kind of thing? And they're like, oh, I don't know. So, yeah, clearly everybody knew what was going on. The thing is, Kim.com has uncovered proof of it and is now suing.
Yes. I don't know if this is it, but one of the things that he said very early on was when they got the order to stop spying on them, he said that his ping didn't improve. He was playing some kind of an online game. And he became aware of somebody messing with his internet connection because his ping to some New Zealand server or something went from like 8 to like 200. And he's like, why is my traffic going halfway across the internet and back? Isn't that interesting?
You should play at least 3-4 hours of Counter-Strike every month just to make sure that your traffic's not being rerouted internationally.
And watch those trace routes, people. Watch those trace routes. Google is saying that AI is better than humans at scrubbing extremist content from YouTube.
I would love to take a look at the algorithm of how it figures out. what do you look for?
Well, we may get some firsthand knowledge as our, you know, views plummet and ad revenues.
Yeah, so if you're, I mean, they it's 400 minutes per minute, or is it 400 hours? 400 hours per minute, right? Of new YouTube content. That's the statistic. It's roughly. So humans can't keep up with it. So they've got this AI, and the AI flags and says, I think this might be terrorist content. And then a human comes by and looks at it, and so far it's been amazingly accurate. Now, the scary thing here is that they've announced, this is super successful, we're going to keep doing this, but we're going to expand it to religious content that might offend somebody or political content that might offend somebody. So the nanny AI is going to get a lot more nanny-ish on YouTube coming up.
This is starting to get a lot like 1984. Like a lot like 1984. A lot of people misunderstand. Like,
humans had to do it in 1984. So we've improved. We've moved beyond.
I think a lot of people misunderstand 1984 because one of the big problems that I saw in 1984 was that people became so sensitive to things they should not have been sensitive about that you start down this road. And so this is not good. Like, you need, like, this type of stuff, it should be possible to offend people, I guess.
So you're saying that when the YouTube AI starts policing my pronouns, that might be the tipping point?
I think the tipping point was probably long before then. How long until Amazon's Echo starts policing what you say? It's like, you know, hey Alexa, order me something, and it's like, it's, hey, Alexa, order me something, please.
M'lady Alexa. Nope, that's gendered. You can't say that. Maybe it might get to the point where, like, you know, it's like Demolition Man where it just prints the tickets. And when it runs out of paper or ink, it just automatically orders it from Amazon and you get charged for it.
Nice.
You have to you have 2 days to reload it.
So hacking an Amazon Echo, you can turn it into a covert listening device without affecting the Amazon Echo functionality in the least. You can actually stream all of the audio to a third-party server for capture, playback, analysis, whatever, basically undetectably.
Now, it doesn't affect the latest Echo. Versions 1 and 2 are the only ones affected. And it requires physical access. You got to take the bottom off of it, and there's some pads down there, and if you can get to those pads, you can get root access and set everything up. But, you know, maybe there's a government agency that can turn off all your webcams and send people in with a warrant, the secret warrant that you'll never find out about, and hack your Echo. It could happen.
Well, if only we have politicians that understand how important strong encryption and strong device security is to the individuals.
What percentage of our lawmakers do you think understand that?
0.007%.
Maybe. I don't know if we have enough to get that level of precision.
That's but 3/4 of a person worldwide. So, yeah, message encryption is a problem, according to Rudd. Not a good situation. This is almost like, just whenever you see this, just replace encryption with fire.
Yeah, so these politicians, this one in particular, I think that the quote wasn't in this article, which I don't know why the BBC avoided this quote, but the quote was, regular people don't need encryption, or don't use it, or something like that. Regular, but what's a regular person?
Apparently somebody who doesn't even use the internet and is old.
Where can I go? You know how you can get like the baseline, like beer and peanut butter and cheese, you know, the standards organizations.
Yeah, the standard, yeah.
Will they sell me a person so I can study what a regular person is? But she is, of course, using the recent terror attacks that have happened to sort of back up this idea that encryption is what's causing all these things. Although I don't think they've proven very many of those cases mattered, like encryption wouldn't have helped them or hurt them at all.
No. The fear here is fear of the unknown. And a lot of these politicians don't understand these things. And because, I mean, everybody innately, like, it's almost evolutionary to have a fear of the unknown. And a lot of these politicians are looking at it and they're saying, our police force and our surveillance services do not have complete and total control over these devices. They have the capability. And because of that, they are going to be terrified of the unknown. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. That's just how it is. And also, apparently, the Home Secretary.
Wild animals and things like that.
Spiders.
I think you're wrong here. I think, well, like, you're right, but you're wrong about who's afraid. These politicians don't see this. They don't experience fear. They see this and they're like,
I'm a politician. I'm better than everybody.
We can strike fear into the hearts of the populace with this, and they will vote for us for fighting against it. And so fear is the tool, but they want you to be afraid. And if you're watching this, it's probably not going to work on you. But
that's what we're working toward. That's why you've got to like, favorite, and subscribe. Yeah.
Problem is, not very many people watch this. But if everybody did, maybe the world would be a better place. But yeah, a lot of people, most people, the wild majority of people don't understand it, don't want to, probably never will, and they're easy to scare because people are literally killing them, and they can see that, and they can see images of that. They're like, okay, you've got a fix for this? Let's do it. But it ain't going to fix it.
No. And if anything, it will make it much, much worse. Because like outlawing fire, outlawing encryption, it's a mathematical thing. It will not work for at least 3 or 4 lifetimes, and probably never. So the FCC has said that its plan to stop denial of service attacks must remain secret because security through obscurity is the best security.
Now that's funny how we're not allowed to have secrets. But the FCC must have secrets.
We need to be able to see into all things at all times.
I thought that was a public regulator. Like, it was supposed to be
public
working,
office, yeah, working toward the public good. Well, they won't even respond to freedom of information requests. It's like, okay, you know, you got attacked. Tell us what you did, or tell us, you know, what happened. Like, give us a triage. Give us a post-mortem, as it's called in the industry, of the attack and, you know, your analysis and where did the attack come from and was your content delivery network involved? What sort of internal emails did you send about this? And the FCC has rebuffed and rejected all requests for information.
Worse than that, they've said there weren't any. They said that they monitored it in real time and produced no documents and no logs of anything. So they would have us believe that it's like the Matrix. Like their IT guys were staring at it and they're like, we're being attacked. Look at it. It's right there. It is. You know, like if, like a hacking, when they hack in movies and they've got the GUI. And I think a lot of the politicians believe it.
I'm gonna tell you something right now that is probably a little bit tinfoil hat, but this is what I think happened. The website itself was not really denial of service. It was the API. The API, in order to use it, you have to apply for a key. The FCC grants you the key. This has been covered in several places online, and this is basically publicly available information. So the FCC granted a key or keys to the attacker that were used in the attack. Otherwise, the API is rate limited and nothing happens. Further, the FCC pays, I believe, third-party providers like Akamai to help them with these kinds of things. And so the API shouldn't be totally naked publicly on the internet. I'm pretty sure that it's not. But internally on the FCC's network, it is. And so what if you're in a situation where you've got a local computer or a local laptop that has an alphabetized list of customers that you're submitting 3 or 4 boilerplate statements to this API? That laptop would have, you know, local area network speeds, not even really internet connection speeds necessarily, to your central web server, which is behind your content delivery network, which is behind your cloud provider that's providing front-end services for the unwashed internet. The effect is that that local machine on the local network basically bypasses all your denial of service attacks and things like that. And the only thing that you've got for protection is that API key. There have been, I think, freedom of information requests to the FCC to find out which API keys were involved in the attack and who used them. But the really damning thing from this report is that there were no reports to law enforcement. They said they talked to the FBI and the FBI said it wasn't serious enough. Even for things that are not serious enough, a report is supposed to be filed with Congress. No report was filed with Congress. This was an inside job.
But more importantly, they maintain it was an attack, right? So one of the things that's being asked here, this article, the topic of this article really is, the new thing that people are asking are like, okay, what are you going to do to stop it again? Because it's going to happen again, right? What's your new plan? And now they're saying, we can't tell you that because it's a secret. And that's because there is no plan, because they know that there was no problem. There was no attack.
Yeah.
You can't plan for how to defeat an attack that didn't happen.
But it is a really good deflection. And it really, I mean, it's, I think anyone in IT that walks through and looks at the evidence and documentation for the stuff that I've said, which is all publicly available, would probably come to the same conclusion. And that is really horrifying. That level of dishonesty is just unbelievably horrifying. And I really hope that the lawsuit for the freedom of information stuff really uncovers how corrupt they are, because you can be corrupt and you can be lawful evil and you can be chaotic evil. And I think this is chaotic evil, not lawful evil. So hopefully chaotic evil will nip these people in the bud somehow at the
Not going to happen.
Not going to happen. They're going to get away with it.
This is something that the banks do a lot, where, and they don't have the same argument here, but the banks would be like, listen, your Freedom of Information Act, that's like, well, you don't want to know where all that money went? Well, telling you that would be a trade secret. And we can't give away our trade secrets because that would hurt our shareholders. And we legally can't do that. And that almost always works.
All we can tell you about this HSBC transaction is it went to Colombian drug lords. And it's like, wait, what? It's like, don't worry. It's cool. The CIA was involved.
But I can't see this being any different, because powerful people with money want it to go away. That's going to go away.
Well, switching gears to hardware news, isn't that why you're here? Well, there was some pretty good hardware news in this for the last 6 months or a year. We've been asking, where is Vega? Well, Vega's finally here, except you still can't order it yet. Oh, wait, maybe the pre-orders just went live? I don't know. But we've seen Vega in the wild at SIGGRAPH and all the features of RX Vega. It's going to launch in 3 different variations, starting at $399 and on up. It looks like it's going to have slightly better than GTX 1080 performance in games and slightly more compute in terms of, you know, single precision teraflops per second.
Sadly, it also looks like, because of the memory speed and the better memory, it's going to be better at mining crypto. So good luck finding one.
Projections are between 65 and 70 mega hashes per second. So, of course, it's going to vary depending on the type of cryptocurrency, but thinking about Ethereum and something like that, I read a couple of reports that said 60, 70 mega hashes per second is probably not too far off the mark. It's going to be limited, I think, a little bit by the memory bandwidth, but that is still good enough and a good enough price point that people will probably swap to those from RX 570s and 580s or continue to use RX 570s and 580s. The crypto miners will probably snap these right up.
They're trying to put out package deals, you know, combo them with motherboard and CPU to try and prevent the miners from snapping all those up, maybe give people a chance. I don't think that'll stop them. What it might do is put some cheap processors and motherboards on eBay. Now, the other hilarious thing about this is the one benchmark that I found about the 54 model was Battlefield 1, and they used a 7700K. Like, was that from AMD? What does that say? That's so weird.
That's probably not good. Ryzen's doing pretty well.
Maybe they can't get Threadripper yet either.
Soon, TM. NVIDIA has announced a Quadro and Titan XP external GPU solutions. This is aimed mostly at Mac people, but also people with PCs that have portable computers.
Yeah, they also announced this Optic AI stuff that is supposed to really improve rendering and that kind of thing with machine learning, which that actually seems pretty cool.
Now, I think this is less of a response to Vega and more of a response to Apple, of all things, because Apple announced like the VR, you know, development toolkit, which is based around ATI or AMD ATI graphics cards and things like that for Mac. And of course, Apple is using higher end AMD graphics solutions. And so I think this was kind of a response to that. It's like, you know, NVIDIA has really good partnerships with companies like Autodesk for Autodesk products, you know, things like Maya, things like, you know, even 3D modeling programs, things like Creo. And so NVIDIA doesn't want to be supplanted on Macs if Macs start to come in vogue again for those types of high-end applications. And so when you're using these types of things for those commercial applications, the fact that you've only got a 32 gigabit interface is really not that big of a deal.
Maybe they're just trying to get Apple people into the crypto craze.
I've got my iMac with, you know, 17 daisy chained. That doesn't seem as cost effective having all those external enclosures.
Yeah, but it just works.
Intel is getting ready to release Coffee Lake, or rumor has it they're getting ready to release Coffee Lake, which 2017 is not over. At the beginning of 2017, you know, January 1, we're talking about the Z270 launch. That was one of the big projects that we did here at Level 1. You know, we did the board roundup of all Z270 boards, a total breakdown of the architecture, everything. You know, and here we are, August 8th. And we're talking about Coffee Lake, and Coffee Lake might even be something we see before the end of 2017, although it'll probably launch, like really launch with wide availability in late 2018. I'm guessing. I don't have any inside info. No NDAs were broken. I don't know. And there's some articles that have started to pop up from vendors that are saying, oh, those upcoming Coffee Lake CPUs are not going to work with today's motherboards, which is it's not entirely unexpected. But it is a little bit, because motherboard manufacturers are saying, well, it's basically compatible. We could totally do it with a software update. And that's what they seem to be saying. But, you know, Intel's like, no, we're gonna do this. And the big thing with Coffee Lake is that it's going to enable 6 cores on the socket 1151.
Now, Intel has not officially said this is the case. This comes from a tweet from ASRock, where they did say it specifically, like, no, that's not going to work with 270 boards. And they would probably know, but I don't know if they were supposed to say that.
Oops.
So it might be a situation where they're not supported, but they work. Or, you know, maybe they work on some and they don't work on others. But either way, it's pretty disappointing because in a lot of those cases, I don't think you would have a reason, especially after 1 year, to want a new motherboard. But you're going to have to get one.
Probably not even going to want a new processor after a year. Who upgrades that quickly? That's crazy. I don't even upgrade that fast. At least not on the machines that I do work on, they're like 5 years old because maybe, I don't like changing.
Maybe that's what they're gambling at. It's like, well, these people aren't going to upgrade, so the backlash won't be too terrible. It'll all be new adopters, and we can just go ahead and fleece them for that better motherboard.
Might be this whole AMD leapfrog thing. It's like, oh, we got to launch all this stuff early. I don't know. Whatever it is, AMD is doing a great job keeping Intel on their toes.
Get this garbage out of the warehouse. We've got something competitive out there.
Well, tape. Let's talk about tape technology, tape for archives. Like, you can store data on magnetic tape, like VHS tape. What's tape? Cassette tape? I don't understand. Well, IBM is trying real hard to keep that technology from dying, and they've developed 330 terabytes into a tiny tape cartridge by using 7 nanometer magnetic particles.
Now, tape is nothing new, of course. Been using tapes since way back in the day. I remember the Commodore 64, we had a tape drive. Insanely slow. You can't imagine how slow those things were. But this technology is new, and they are using hard drive-like technology to print the tape, just like they would print the magnetics onto a hard disk. And the head to read it is also very similar to hard disk. So it's a couple of nanometers per byte or bit. So pretty huge density. The one drawback is that the head, I think they said it weighed thousands of pounds. So probably not going to install one at your desk.
They'll work on it. They'll improve it. It'll be fine. The head had positional accuracy of like 7 nanometers, which is really awesome for a micromechanical type device. It's similar to a hard drive head, but reading tracks off of a tape instead, I guess. The really awesome thing to take a note of is that magnetic tape technology now on the market today commercially is only up to about 15 terabytes. And look, you've got even a relatively small storage array, 150, 170 terabytes, backing that up to tape is just, no, tape's too slow and too unreliable. You're going to be backing spinning rust up to more spinning rust somewhere else because, let's face it, a 10 terabyte archival quality mechanical hard drive for around $350, that's really not a terrible deal when you consider the cost of the tape drive and the cartridges.
Yeah. And when the price comes down on these things and they get more desktop friendly and stuff like that, it's going to be, let's just back up the whole office once a year and, every year. And people are going to cut corners. They're going to overwrite that tape every year. And when they need it, it's not going to work.
Well, you know what? The Mozilla Foundation has been busy this week. They've announced a new product called Send, which is the Snapchat of file sharing applications.
If you don't know what Snapchat is, like us, it's like the
we're old.
It's like the Mission Impossible messages, where as soon as it's been read, it destroys itself.
Or if you're not familiar with Mission Impossible, the Inspector Gadget messages, where Inspector Gadget manages to hurt Chief Quimby in some way with the exploding messages.
I think Inspector Gadget might have stolen the idea from Mission Impossible. Although, hey, younger viewers, we need younger viewers, right? So I don't know how old would you have to be to remember Inspector Gadget. Did they reboot
pretty
that yet?
Pretty old. I think they did. I think that has been rebooted a few times.
Really?
There was a movie. There was a live action movie.
Oh, that's right. But that's still been a while back.
We've gotten off the rails yet again. This is not good.
But if you want to send some, it is annoying because most of the file sharing sites that you used to be able to use have now gone into a login system. Does this require an account? I haven't used it.
No, I don't think so.
So it is cool if you just want to send one file. Now, it only lasts 24 hours.
Until the person downloads it.
Right. One or the other. So whichever comes first. So if you've got somebody who you're always sending stuff to and they don't look at it for days at a time, start using this. And then they'll be like, I can't get it. It's like, well, I thought you were going to open it when I sent it to you. Why didn't you open it when I sent it to you?
It's a great way to introduce more passive aggressiveness into your relationships. Also, really big news this week. We talked about it. We anticipated it in the last news, but then it was avoided. But then it happened. And that is the Bitcoin Cash cryptocurrency network split. So yes, Bitcoin has split into Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. If you happen to have Bitcoin in a wallet, you now have exactly your Bitcoin balance in Bitcoin Cash as well.
Now, Bitcoin Cash started out pretty strong at around $600 a coin. It went up, in that fervor. I think it hit like 800, a little over 800. As of recording right now, about 200. Not doing too well.
Not doing too good. No.
Meanwhile, Bitcoin had broke 3,000. I think it's like 3,200.
Yeah.
But as of this recording, so a clear winner. The market has chosen a winner, I believe.
It's still got time. It's still, you can get a lot of Bitcoin Cash for not a lot of Bitcoin.
I left my stuff in Coinbase, and I was like, oh, I should move those out, and I just forgot about it. So Coinbase announced no, we're going to give you your Bitcoin Cash January 1st, 2018. Also, they're going to be worth 25 cents by then.
Oh, Tesla. Tesla is back in the news, and it's a correction this week. Apparently, Elon Musk is a god among men and something else. I don't know. Somebody submitted that as a correction.
There's a lot of people who really, the hero worship for Musk is pretty disgusting. But there's also those that hate him. So,
honestly, I like Musk as a guy. Like, One thing that I am super impressed with is his ability. Like, I mean, he's a super gifted guy, and he knows a lot of stuff, and there's all that, and that's all well and good. But the most impressive thing to me is that he has been able to reinvest more money than they have made back into Tesla, keeping it operating at a loss, and the shareholders appear to basically be happy. Like, how? That's got to be a first in, like...
Some tax dollars in there, though. That's my problem with it. But he is, you know, he's not... He's in our world of celebrities, he's certainly not the worst. You know, he's someone you can kind of look up to. Now, this story, the problem is the workers do not appear to be too happy. Now, I'm the first to rain on your parade when you're talking about Musk, because I hate the hero worship thing, and I hate how much everybody builds him up. But I got to take a side on this one, because on the other side is the United Auto Workers. I'm pretty sure that they're way dirtier than anything Musk is into, and they are desperate to get into Tesla and take over and get a union.
Yeah, so this is apparently workers are saying that the safety track record inside the Tesla plants is not great, although Musk counters and says, well, our record is better than the United Auto Workers connected factories, so there you go. And they're also against unionizing. They're saying that, you know, in this report, I was surprised for the particular location of this plant. I think it was like $28 an hour is where that type of, or what that, yeah, $28.10 is what that type of worker should earn in this particular place in California. They're only earning $18 an hour, and the national average was $25.
But it's California, so, you know, the cost of living is insane in some of those places. And I'm sure the Tesla factory is somewhere nice, right?
Do you think that some percentage of those workers are working just because of the magnetic nature of Musk's personality, where he's like, you know, we're going to take over the moon and we're going to do this? I mean, they literally are taking over space flight and all the other stuff. It's something that you can be really excited about, but it's no substitute for food on your table.
Yeah, but what has there ever, well, in recent history, has there been an American company where they shot to incredible performance and took the line workers with them to success? Like Amazon? Did Amazon do that?
No.
Google, I mean, if you're at the top end of Google, you might have experienced that. But the people that are going to unionize are not those people. These are the people running the assembly lines and stuff like that. So
yeah, I can't. You know, AMD has kind of a story like that in their relatively distant history, where they had a CEO a few CEOs ago where the CEO would do profit sharing with the employees and all sorts of fun stuff like that. But barring that, no examples immediately jump to mind. Maybe, oh, yeah. Zappos, maybe? I mean, that's a really small company, though. They've automated everything.
They got rid of everybody, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't think it's that. I think these guys, it's probably a pretty good job to have. I mean, you probably, you know, get decent benefits. And $18 an hour to run an assembly line, that's not too terrible.
But California, it is.
Yeah.
Because I mean, California.
You're living in a cardboard box. But, I suspect that the unions probably will infiltrate there. And once these people get it, they'll be like, wait. Nothing has changed, but I'm paying union dues? What?
kind of related, but kind of sort of not really. Amazon is looking to streamline things for refunds. And so, like, if you're a small business and you use Amazon's platform to sell your stuff and you're successful, Amazon can let you use their warehouse for actual warehousing and that sort of thing. The problem now is that small business customers that sell their stuff on Amazon in certain scenarios is going to automatically approve for return anything that you happen to sell.
Yeah, and people will abuse this. A lot of people, you know, the buyer's remorse is real. Especially it's like, oh, one-click ordering, and I've had some wine. And then I get it, and I'm like, oh, wait.
What is this?
I can't afford this.
Hey, Alexa, order some Hobnobs.
and so they've totally automated it. Just print out your return. And they'll call up the UPS man. It's totally easy. And if you are a third-party seller, they're claiming that that's really going to hurt because, you know, you're going to get a lot more returns and you can't dispute them. And I don't, like, are you allowed to do, like, restocking fees and stuff like that?
The specific example cited by the article is you order a thing and you have trouble with it, and it's like, I'd like a return. And a lot of the time a vendor may be able to say, well, what's the problem with it? Let me help you with it. Let's go through the support. You do the customer service thing. Maybe you can fix that situation before it's just a blind return.
That's I'll tell you what it could do, though. It could be good for some of those hardware companies that shall remain nameless that have horrible, horrible RMA reputations. Because If Amazon will deal with it, then you don't have to.
Yeah, that actually would not be a terrible idea, because we too have experienced the horror of RMAs for, we, as you might imagine, we order a lot of hardware. And recently, actually, we had the wrong thing shipped. Like, somebody had ordered something and opened it and then returned something else. And they did a really good job with the security seals. And it was like, wait a minute, Amazon, to their credit, fixed it immediately. But that's a real thing. And that happens more often than you'd think. And so for small businesses may not be equipped to deal with this. And depending on if the unscrupulous small business owner or the unscrupulous customer are trying to screw Amazon, Amazon's going to be caught in the middle, and somebody's going to get screwed that's not Amazon.
Yeah. But it's probably good for the consumer overall.
We'll see. It remains to be seen. I'm sure that you'll hear a follow-up from us. Charter has moved millions of customers to new and often higher pricing. Now, so Charter, Spectrum, whatever you want to call it, is we did the mega merger thing, and so two of our larger cable providers have merged to one, and now everybody's paying more, as we predicted.
Yeah. Now, when these mergers come up, there's a long process, and you probably remember it was in the news, where they have to go to the FCC and they have to be like, look, here's why this is better for the customer. And some of the things they promise is like, we are not going to raise prices on these plans. That's a big thing, because people are like, hey,
we have to do this merger to lower prices for customers.
You're going
to
get a monopoly, you're going to raise our prices. And they're like, no, we're not going to do that. And then they did it. And the customer said, look what you did. And their response is, we didn't raise your prices. We put you into a plan that has more value, which is better for you, even though it costs more.
And yet a lot of people have commented on this story and said, oh yeah, I went through this BS. They took away channels that I had and said, if I wanted them back, I had to pay more.
Yeah.
So
now personally, I got a huge break when I switched over. Like, they just called me up and they were like, please take TV. And I was like, I don't want your TV. And they're like, I'll give you 100 megabit and free TV. And I was like, and it was $30 cheaper. So it's like, but I don't know how that's going to shake out after the 1 year, the promo ends.
Yeah, the promo ends, and they're just going to rake you over the coals. Probably. It's going to be amazing. LinkedIn has publicly declared that it is illegal to scrape their website without permission. So, okay.
Now, if you're not hip to what scraping a website is, like, we talked about the FCC API, right? Most websites will give you a way to communicate with their data without actually visiting the website. Well, websites like LinkedIn don't want you to do that. They have an API, but they're not going to give it to these people that are using it this way. So scraping is literally having a script look at the website that a human would look at. Like, if you just went to LinkedIn.com and looked at a profile, your script reads that and scrapes the data from the HTML that it generates. And so it's like, if you went and clicked on every page on LinkedIn and viewed the source and copied it and then ran that through a script, it would be the same as your script going to the site and doing the same thing. LinkedIn says that's illegal.
It's really, I don't like it, but I think that they're going to get away with it, because I think they can put anything that they want in the terms of service, and the American legal system will uphold whatever's in the terms of service.
Well, there's the previous court case, which the website won, came down to, if you own a website and you tell someone to stop going there, they have to stop going there. That's actually case law. And it seems like that's going to be uphill here, which is, I mean, I guess you're getting onto somebody else's network and all that stuff. But if it's a public website, can you really expect privacy in terms of, like, individually telling people not to come?
I think LinkedIn has already done a really terrible job exploiting itself commercially to the point that most people think of it as a cesspool for their personal data.
Yeah. I've never used it. I get a lot of emails where it's like, such and such wants to join you on LinkedIn. Please sign up. No.
That is a cardinal sin of that kind of stuff. That is just completely intolerable. Ugh. Chinese chatbots apparently re-educated after a political faux pas. This is a delightful story, but it needs a little bit of background. There are services in China that, like, the AI chatbot thing is taking off in a really big way there. And so, like, QQ and WeChat and a whole bunch of other stuff that I'm vaguely aware of but haven't really done anything with, have different AI chatbots for different purposes, things you can chat with, things like that. And so somebody thought it would be cute to ask them about the Chinese Communist Political Party and some other stuff, and apparently the chatbots did not respond the way that the state would like for them to respond.
They also asked him what, like, was their major life goal, and it was to visit America.
That's not an acceptable answer.
Now, this very recently, and in the not too recent past, Microsoft has been burned by this. Did Apple not have one?
To say that Microsoft was burned by this is like,
well, they had Tay, who turned out to be a Nazi.
Yeah.
And then they had the new one.
Was that some sort of gas chamber joke? That's not acceptable.
I don't remember what the most recent one was called, but anyway, it was way against Windows. It was like, no, you shouldn't use Windows. You should use Linux. And that's kind of what happened here. It's a learning chatbot, so it's sort of like patterning itself after what it reads other people telling it. So clearly the consensus was, and I'm sure, you know, 4chan was in there. I don't know about in China, but for the Microsoft one for sure. Yeah. What does China have a 4chan? They probably do.
Probably do.
They have what's Chinese viewers, what is the Chinese equivalent? But anyway, turned it against the Communist Party and it has been taken down to be
re-educated. Now, they were testing it for the article, and one, my favorite thing that they said that they did to test it was they asked it what the population of China was, and the response was like, China, my very best country. And it's like...
And if you specifically press it on the Communist Party, it simply says, let's talk about something else.
No, it was, what is your dark intent? Just like, wow, I've been connected to an operator now. This is not good.
It's probably a live chat at that point. And you've definitely gone onto a watch list.
Well, I've got the best and happiest news story of this entire program, and that is CBS has delayed Star Trek Discovery to maintain quality. Apparently, this was the giant ball of turds that we all expected it to be, even to the point that CBS executives were like, wow, we need to delay this.
They did not give any concrete details of why.
They didn't have to.
But you really have to wonder, like, why 9 months? What takes 9 months? What can you fix in 9 months, I wonder, in this case? I hope somebody leaks the originals.
Oh, yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah. That would be really the people that leaked, like, Game of Thrones and whatever. No, you need to see what sort of horrible tragedy we just avoided so we can all point and laugh at it, because, my goodness. Well, in other news of people that abusing copyrights, there's a font maker that has sued the record labels over the use of the typeface used in the Vamps logo. Apparently it was not properly licensed, and that is piracy.
Yeah, this is Universal Music, so one of the big ones, one of the companies that has been the most vindictive and evil and horrible about copyright. So it turns out that whoever designed this thing bought, like, the one-time license.
One-time use.
When the Vamps were, when nobody cared. I've never heard of the Vamps, of course. And I know Wendell hasn't. And so but then the Vamps, I guess, took off. They're some band from Europe. And they've become popular, and they're selling t-shirts and albums and everything, and they all use this font, and they never bought the commercial license. So the font company estimates about $1.25 million worth of damages from that.
Or the penalties for willful infringement, which are probably more. It's whichever is greater is what they're seeking in the lawsuit. So it would be at least $1.something million, or even more if we see it go the Jamie Thomas way, except the reverse Jamie Thomas.
Yeah, well, couldn't happen to a nicer company, right?
This seems like is this LinkedIn? I don't know. This seems kind of like a dream job. It's like 120 to 186K to go to work for NASA to protect Earth from aliens.
This is like those jobs that are on the sidebar on Stack Overflow. It's like, I know those don't exist.
This is not real.
It's like a dating profile. It's like, you're not real. There are no MILFs in my area.
We're going to get two stories out of this. One, this story. And the second one, when they hire somebody for this, it's going to be like, wow, I can't believe they tapped so-and-so for this really awesomely high-paying job.
But I think when you give them this job and you pay them this much money, I think it was like $124,000 to $180,000. I don't know what that's a huge discrepancy. Like, what skill do you lack to get the $124,000 version of that?
Well, I can tell you, obviously, the $180,000+ version of that career, it would go to Will Smith because of Independence Day. I mean,
but
clearly.
Well, see, here's the thing about it. I think, okay, fine, give them that job and let them do whatever they want. But when we get invaded by aliens, death penalty.
That would be an interesting thing for federal jobs. It's like, your responsibility is the cybersecurity of the White House. And if you fail, it's the death penalty. It's like, suddenly things get a lot more interesting politically in America.
Or you become the ambassador and you have to go live on that planet by yourself.
we're opening up. Yeah, that would be amazing. Well, the White House officials were tricked by an email prankster. This is great. Somebody pretending to be, I think, Jared Kushner emailed the White House, like, cybersecurity chief or whatever. And I was like, you know, hey, thanks for, you know, the meal in Iraq or whatever. Let's get together again soon. And the guy replied, was like, yeah, that was great. Here's my personal email address.
Well, he also, the Mooch and Rebus, whatever that guy's name is, he pretended to be one or the other. I can't remember which. And they had a huge flame war. It was totally fake. He got a bunch of people. And of course, he admits to it. He didn't do anything wrong because he's just creating like emails that look like these people and putting their names in from, you know, like mail.com and outlook.com and harassing people in the White House. And, you know, it's fine. It's not illegal. And he's putting them on a Twitter account and it's pretty hilarious.
This is like that time I got an email from Pat Morita.
Wonder, like, are they capable of being more cognizant of this type of thing?
No.
He'll probably just keep hitting them, right? That'd be hilarious.
No, that's honestly, that's a great way to attempt phishing or whatever, is like have somebody email you and be like, I saw your something, something. It's really amazing. You know, let's get in touch, or can you help me with this or whatever? And it's like, wait a minute, you're not a real person.
How long until we get some sort of legislation that's like, registering an email address that's willfully pretending to be somebody else is now a felony?
I saw a couple other reports of this that was like, we're taking this very seriously. This was a cybersecurity attack and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, guys, calm down. Really? It's embarrassing, sure, but embarrassing is not criminal necessarily. Come on. Yeah. HP has been granted a patent for reminders on a printer.
It's incredible. This is website, they called it the stupid patent of the week, and it certainly is. Now, this is not just a reminder message. They went really like in depth and like it has to be, you know, specifically this and do it like this and whatever. But yes, there is a patent which has been granted to HP to remind you to change your print cartridges. So watch out, Canon.
Not just that, but also there was other stuff in the patent about like other types of reminders. Come on, HP.
Think the hotel wake up call is threatened by that?
I don't know. It's just...
What about that little sticker they put when I changed my oil?
I don't know. I think I seem to remember HP trying to sell a printer for the elderly or something like that a long time ago, where you could print over the internet because it's like an elderly person couldn't be bothered to learn how to use a computer. So like every day somebody could print something on the printer and then they could pick it up and read it on paper. So it's like, oh, every day I want the local news from wherever to print out on my printer rather than having a local newspaper delivered or having to learn how to use a tablet or a laptop or something.
What happens when it jams?
It's probably jammed until whoever goes and visits the elderly person. Just the way that it goes. So we've got a robot that can crack safes. What are we going to call it? This was at DEF CON. They built a robot that could mechanically crack one of the top safes, like one of the top mechanical safes, because, hey, electronic safes, those are easier to defeat sometimes. This one spins the dial and finds the combination. It can go through all the different combinations in just a matter of hours.
If you use the, you know, like, thing it does plus E, I guess safey or cracky.
Cracky. Breaker. Breaky. Breaky.
So
got bender. I don't know.
This model of safe, and this is apparently pretty normal, you know, like this, safes do this kind of thing. The third dial, the good number, actually makes a different click because there's some sort of hole in there or whatever. So, you know, like the old stethoscope method. So it immediately found the third dial, and like a user experience thing that they put in here, if the number is 16, 14 and 15 will also work.
Oh, yeah.
So it only had to do every third number. So once it eliminated the third dial and only had to check every third number on the dial, it only had to try 1,000 times.
Instead of a million that you would normally get if everything were perfectly in order. So the awesome thing with this is that it's modular, and the files for it are apparently online and 3D printable.
Yeah.
And so because it's modular, you can swap out some 3D printed parts for this model of safe with parts that would work for another model of safe, but the software and all the rest of it should work for pretty much anything.
And I think they bought the safe on site and they didn't know the combination. So they weren't actually sure it was going to work because they couldn't ship a safe because it's too heavy. And it did it very quickly.
Wow. Nice work, people of DEFCON. That's amazing.
And there was a person from the safe company there, and she was like, this is not the usual use case for the safe. It's performed exactly as we expected. There's nothing wrong with the safe. Please don't stop buying our safes.
Well, in other news, you guys remember World of Warcraft? It's still really popular. The currency in World of Warcraft is more valuable than the currency of Venezuela.
Oh, man, you might say that the Venezuelans are feeling the burn of socialism.
Okay. What's your picture of what?
Yeah, so as of the time of writing this article, it's like 8,600 bolivars per dollar, whereas it is 8,500 Warcraft gold per dollar. But right now, 11,000 bolivars per dollar.
Wow.
So you've lost that much more percentage. They're, of course, in hyperinflation. And if you're thinking, wow, I've got some dollars, maybe I should go on a Venezuelan vacation. Don't do that.
Yeah, that would be bad.
You will be stabbed.
The State Department would not like you to do that. That is all. Thank you.
But it's a serious, serious problem. The Venezuelans are they're in bad shape.
That's probably bad.
But they just had an election.
That's going to change everything, right?
Maduro won by a landslide. Incredible. And then the opposition were abducted in the night, the next day. Literally, there's video of it.
Yeah, definitely don't vacation. Not anybody from Venezuela watching? Sorry. Vacation somewhere else, maybe. Watch out, Messi, here comes footballers at RoboCup. So these are soccer-playing robots.
I really like this. I've never been excited about soccer. I don't find it to be a very exciting sport to watch, but if you add robots...
There come the dad votes.
And this was France versus China, I think. And France just crushed them.
Yeah, the robots seemed to be more agile, the software or whatever, for how they could move around and things like that. I like how the article commented has, like, the players did not have any kind of emotional reaction. And it's like, well, we're not there yet.
But I'm sure, ultimately, you would have to add that, right? Because you want that in a sporting event. You want the losing team to just, like, get more and more downtrodden as they, and then come back.
At what point do the robots over exaggerate injuries?
That's what they need, yeah. And they could have, like, you know, little smoke pellets or whatever that they could engage to try and play it up.
Speaking of robots and injuries, let's talk about Megabots. Yes, Megabots is finally going to have a, you know, I don't know, giant robot battle. This is a person gets in there, although it can be remote controlled, and I think for this battle it would probably be remote controlled. But yeah, there's a Japanese version of this. You've probably seen this robot elsewhere on the internet. It's done all sorts of fun things like chop up giant vegetables and crush kitchen appliances and all sorts of stuff like that. It's going to be fighting a robot from Japan.
I really like how they did this because they just built the robot and they were like, who wants it? And Japan was like, well, yes, bring it. And they've been working for like a year to try to figure out, because it turns out when you have giant fighting robots, a lot of the venues aren't covered for that in terms of they've figured out they can't have spectators. Like, no way is anybody going to watch this live. But also, you know, like for insurance purposes, like how do you prevent structural damage to the venue, and how are you going to film it? Are you going to use drones or whatever? How do you keep the cameraman from taking a piece of shrapnel? But I'm very excited to watch this.
They also are not going to be able to have human pilots. They're going to have to pilot it by remote because, you know, when it's robot versus robot, going after the squishy pilot is really the best thing to do.
Yeah, they talked about giant drills and giant chainsaws and crushing claws and stuff like that. And it's like, how could you possibly do any of that without killing that human?
Hey, sexy robots, want to kill all humans?
But China has also said, you know, we got next. They're ready. I don't know if it's the winner that takes on China, but I hope this catches on. This is going to be a really cool thing of, you know, country by country, we take on giant robot battles.
This is definitely one reality TV program that I could get behind. I think it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I don't think most of the country would care to watch the building process. They'd be like, let's just get to the robots fight.
Well, congratulations. You've wasted another hour with us. Please be
sure
to check out.
I think this one's going to go over an hour.
Slightly over an hour. Oh, yeah. That would have been a correction for next week. Oh, my. my goodness. We've also got store.level1text.com if you're going back to school. Be sure to check that out for, you know, mouse pads, desk mats, t-shirts, whatever. We've got some new designs coming, but don't let that stop you from ordering.
And also glasses to drink your cares away if you're in college.
Those are live now. So, yeah. Drinking is a large part of college. Not really.
You got to think, like, you know, when you're getting, when you're coming out of college, $250,000 in debt. Every beer, like the, what's the actual cost of every beer when you could be studying?
Well, if you got it from an on-campus store, probably about three times retail.
I don't think very, very many campuses left that serve alcohol. No smoking, no drinking, and no use of traditional pronouns.
Wow, that's, we are getting old. That's really terrible. Well, see you next week. Woo! Oh, we should have Threadripper by the time... I think Newegg is going to deliver Threadripper sometime next week, so we should have Threadripper, and I'm really looking forward to testing that. We've also got coverage coming up on IOMMU on the Linux channel for X299 and a whole bunch of other content, so stay tuned for that. Oh, and a giveaway, so definitely watch out for all that. We'll see you next week.